Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 3 of season 4. This one is called Brothers. It was directed by Rob Bowman, written by Rick Berman, and it aired back on October 8, 1990. In this episode, Commander Data aborts an emergency mission and hijacks the Enterprise in response to a homing command from his quote-unquote father. So, let's talk about the Soong family, shall we? Tana and Clay are going to join me to talk about Brothers, an episode that, you know, brings back a character from the past, introduces us to a character we've heard about, and then shows another character hijack the Enterprise and fly it around at a high rate of speed. Anyway, Tana and Clay are going to talk about Brothers with me right after this.
Computer, recognize Picard, Jean-Luc, Alpha 2 clearance.
Priority clearance recognition, Alpha 2.
Cancel separation sequence.
Sequence canceled.
Isolate all remaining command functions and accept related orders and inquiries from main bridge only.
The separation sequence has been aborted, Captain.
Computer, recognize Jean-Luc Picard, Alpha 2 priority, and re-establish separation procedure immediately.
Orders regarding command functions are no longer accepted from your present location.
And just what location are they accepted from?
Interface terminals on main bridge only.
You're the only one who has clearance to localize command functions.
It seems Commander Data has acquired it as well.
So you two, as an avid fan of gaming, you know, board gaming and video gaming, I have a question to pose to you, Tana and Clay. Is Data OP? Is Data overpowered in the game of Star Trek?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm probably going to spend most of the time talking about the first half of this episode because I have some huge issues. And I don't mean that like as far as the episode itself, but yeah, there are some things that need to be addressed as far as
what
Data can and can't do and why fewer people should probably trust him.
That was the glaring thing. I remember really liking this episode when I was a kid and had watched it, and I think it appeals to a kid. You know, you've got the two little brothers, sort of the B plot going on. But yeah, watching it as an adult, it does not have the same resonance that it once did for
more
me.
More like a B minus plot, am I right? But anyway, we're talking about Brothers, if people haven't picked up on that yet. It is one of the early season 4 episodes. Yeah, and to tie into your point, what you were talking about, Sean Murphy, when he was on the last one, he was saying that, he likes Brothers. I kind of am in the same boat as you two. I remember liking this one quite a bit. And
yep.
I don't know if there's anything really wrong with this one. It does not resonate on a level that I thought it really should have. Do we want to start with the sort of opening, or do we want to just sort of give a general point about what we think the whole thing about the whole process or the whole episode?
My takeaway feeling from the whole episode was just that this held up way better when I was a kid. They kind of play down to the audience, or they're sort of infantilization. Wow, that is not a word, guys.
Sounded good. Keep rolling.
But it like plays.
I hope you pushed your glasses up when you said that.
I definitely did.
Took a drag on your pipe.
I think it supposes a more childlike audience, and I was just sort of like, no, this is not working. There are too many holes in the plot.
I don't know if I consider there to be a lot of holes in there probably are once we start breaking it down. I think my problem here is that it's the kind of thing I don't notice when I'm a kid, is that I don't really know what the point of this episode was.
I do.
Go ahead.
It was to give Data's like philosophical exchange with his dad purpose. So, you know, he's got his like quest for the rest of his life.
That's true, and that's sort of what it does. I guess here's my big thing. This episode feels it's not the sum of its parts. It's like much less than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And I think that the problem is that it feels like this should be a very big event in Star Trek, and it really comes across like nothing even matters.
Yeah, and that's like shocking to me because we get to the end of the episode and you're like, and sort of nothing changes. You know, it's a weekly series. You know, next week's episode is just going to kind of pick up in a neutral place. But there were some season changing things that happened, red flags that were raised in this episode that I don't think ever get resolved.
No.
Or talked about again.
I kind of feel like, I actually enjoyed this episode. I found it very entertaining. I have to wonder about the size of Brent Spiner's ego, because I feel like he's just constantly pushing for, you know, acting bits to do, or but anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the I think this suffers a bit from season one disease, where they have it's like adjusted season one disease, where this time they have a B plot where it is like tangentially connected to the main plot, and it actually it's tangentially connected, but it doesn't really – it's not really interesting.
Oh, I see. I feel like the note would be we love this stuff. Like a studio note coming back would be like we love this stuff of like the A and the B plot matching thematically. Give us a matching B plot. And they did, and it means nothing in terms of anything. Yep. It's just like – they're like the episode show is called Brothers. He's like, oh, I'll put a brother plot in there and see how it goes.
Yeah.
The kid is sick, right? So there's like this time ticking away. There's a clock. They need to get this kid to a starbase to save his life because of an accident between two human brothers, right? But like the kid almost dies.
Yeah.
And there's no blowback on Data. Yeah. There's nothing.
Although I don't understand why Riker was so pissed off at his brother. His brother didn't poison him. You know, it's like this is just an accident. I don't know why Riker's got his like panties in a bunch about this whole thing.
I thought that was just sort of like, you know, the adult figure making sure to act appropriately disappointed with the kid, you know?
Yeah. I guess, yeah. But
that plot, I mean, it doesn't – it's just – I think the problem with the plot, that B plot is – okay, so – sorry. I'm kind of looking all over the place here. So my big thing is I think the Data, Lore, and Sung plot should have been the entire episode.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
They didn't need the B plot, but I know that they did need the B plot because they needed some sort of way to get down to Data and then get Data back onto the ship.
They needed a reason for...
Oh, so the force field?
They needed a reason for Data to... Like, for their urgency to get back to Data, basically. Right.
Yeah, and it just... I mean, and even if you want to... It's really tough to look at this and go, oh, look how great of a thematic parallel this is when you're coming off of the family episode,
which
is basically 40 minutes of great family parallels.
Yep.
If anything... If you wanted to cut this down, you probably should have wedged. You know what you should have done? Got rid of all the other shit in the last episode that didn't really work, and then made one episode that was half about Picard and his brother, and half about Data and Lore.
Right, and his brother. Yeah,
actually, that would have really worked. Except both of them. I like that both of them sort of get their own episodes. But
I do too. I think they deserve their own episodes. But it's like it's so, it
that
works.
Would make more sense.
It almost feels like the Data, Lore, Sung plot was part of. Was originally written into the first draft of the family episode.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, well, you know what? We should probably spend more time on this. And then they broke it off, but they didn't have enough to fill an episode or something. That's the other thing about the B plot is the B plot is only there to add urgency and also to add a resolution to the ending because there's no real resolution to the data plot.
No, there isn't.
It just sort of happens. And then Laura's like, oh, smell you jerks later. And then it's gone.
That ties into my I feel that the Sung, Lore, and Data getting together should have been much more impactful than it actually is. It really Lord just really does just show up and is like, hey, what's going on? And then, you know, he throws Soong over a table and just moseys on out of there. But it's like, you know, the Data plot is problematic to me because the stakes are so low. I was reading online the actual notes. This was just for some notes to give you guys. This is, yeah. Clay will be pleased. This is Rob Bowman's last Star Trek episode. Maybe not pleased that it's his last, but
I was actually really surprised to see his name on the credits.
Yeah, he came back for this one.
Because there was a few things that they do in this episode that were just well, they weren't mind-boggling, but like I actually found myself saying, man, they should have got Rob Bowman to direct this episode.
But the other – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say the one that stands out is when Riker and Worf go up that go up the ladder into the tube.
Yep.
And then there's just a shot of an empty hallway.
Did you not like that? Did you not like that shot?
I mean, it was fine, but it was just like – it was clearly they didn't have the budget to do another force field scene.
Right. No, that's exactly what it was.
So it's Riker off screen going, dah, what was that?
like he's got electrocuted. Yeah. No, but I liked that shot, actually. It's like I think they should do more of that was my sort of thought about it. Like, it's a great way to save force field budget and stuff yeah. like that. It's just
I guess I shouldn't criticize the shot itself because it did, the episode did look good, but –
Yeah, yeah, it's that's funny because I wrote that down. I was like, I really love that shot. But anyway, it was directed by Bowman. This is the first script written by Rick Berman too, who is basically the studio suit runner for this show. He's not the creative head, but he's sort of the financial guy who goes on to sort of control the franchise for a couple of years or a decade or so after this. The original note was that Michael Piller had gotten this script from, Berman. And Lore was not a main part of it, or Lore was not in it. It was basically the same, except Piller's notes were Data and Soong have no drama in their scenes together, which is still a problem in this episode. Lore sort of fixes it, but not really. I just feel the Soong and Data stuff has no kick to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and let's start off with this. I think that their characterization of Soong was all wrong.
In what way, Wes?
I felt he should have been much more sort of, I don't mind the way he plays it, but I feel he should have been written to be much more of a like super cyberneticist or something.
Yep. Instead of basically like Yoda.
Yeah, instead of basically Yoda just walking around.
Oh, and, I remember I watched this, I actually fell asleep while I was watching it a couple weeks ago, but, I messaged Sean and I said that Soong's makeup looks like yogurt from Spaceballs.
Yes,
it does.
Took hours. God damn it! That shot and that makeup were fantastic. No, I feel that Soong is not nearly as interested in Data as an android. You know, it even ties into set design. At the end, it's got this weird line where Geordi walks in. He's like, this must be Dr. Soong. Look at all this shit. It's like, there are like toy dinosaurs, Geordi.
That's like, the thing. Like, I was going to say, did you guys pick up on the fucking Tyrannosaurus skull?
Yeah.
Nothing.
It was a lot of dinosaurs.
Nothing in his set said anything that this is a world-renowned cyberneticist. You know, it's like, he has just like potted plants and dinosaurs everywhere.
Yep. Yeah.
And you kind of write him as an old, you know, a codger, this like, I don't know, buffoonial grandfather instead of a world-renowned scientist or,
yep.
You know.
Even just, you know, Data in his conversations should have been like technical to a level that the audience doesn't understand just to show that this guy knows everything about Data.
Right.
They don't do that. His stuff is always like, Data, pat your head and rub your belly at the same time.
Yeah, what the fuck? What the heck was that?
it's just very, very...
It's about the vanity of God, you guys.
Yes, it's about immortality. But I mean, what did you guys... What'd you think about Soong, or what'd you think about the performances in general between those two? Or three, as it were, eventually.
I think they get better when Lore shows up.
Yeah,
it's kind of... fall flat.
It's kind of dry when it's just the two of them.
It's just a lot of medium nonsense. I suppose the thing that's changed most for me since I was younger, I don't know how you guys felt, was this episode actually makes you somewhat sympathetic to Lore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I did not realize that the show did that, and it seems a strange choice that they go that way, because basically Soong seems to have made no attempt to fix his defective android Lore.
Yeah.
And Lore is upset about this.
Well, as he says, he didn't know that he was back and together. He was in pieces.
No, yeah. He disassembled him because he didn't. Soong has this weird line. He's like, I disassembled you, and the next logical step, instead of fixing you, was to build Data. And it's a weird logic, I guess.
Well, I was okay with that, because I was thinking, all right, well, this one doesn't work. Maybe I don't know why it doesn't work, so I'll build Data, build him correctly, and then I can see what I did wrong and go back and fix Lore.
He does say something like that, Clay. You're right. Like, I remember something in the dialogue, Wes, where Soong says, I was going to get back to you, but then the big snowflake from the sky destroyed everything, or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I have to ask you a question, because I don't remember. Why is Lore so much more human than Data?
He just has the emotional programming. That's the only difference
that's between
the two. Yeah.
Okay.
He seems to have the chip that was for Data, but he already has it, is basically the way that I understand it.
That was the other thing I couldn't figure about the ending. It's like, why does he get the chip? I mean, why does he care?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of they're trying to really humanize these two robots and have them bicker like brothers might over, you know, well, you made that for him, so I want it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the father figure is saying, I didn't make this for you. It's not going to work the same for you. And he calls it something like a basic emotion program, something mm-hmm. very like simple emotion or something catered to Data.
Yeah.
But yeah, that makes no sense why Lore would want it.
Because that's something Lore basically already has, right?
Right.
I assume it's just to sort of screw over Data.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He does it basically so Data, like, if I can't have good things, Data's not going to have good things. Yeah. I mean,
and because the dad spent all that time just working on the chip for Data.
Yeah, he's always Data's always been the favored child in Lore's eyes, which the script seems to back up, because, I mean, my tie-in for it makes you sympathetic to Lore, because Soong, you would think, would treat them more like people. But he seems very willing to just be like, I'll just disassemble him and, you know, fuck it, whatever. Like, So he has this sort of coldness to them, or a coldness to Lore in particular. And he builds Data, who has no emotional and is not like scaring the town folk. And he seems to prefer him. So it's just this weird sort of back and forth.
And then it doesn't make sense, because then he insists on reactivating Lore against Data's protestations all of the evidence, and he does it. He's like, no, I know him. He's a good boy. He'll be good. He always listens to me. He's a good boy. Like, a scientist wouldn't say this, and, you know, so they're just casting him as this weird, kooky old grandfather type.
Right.
Well, I could see maybe a scientist saying that if it was someone who did treat his creations as creations.
Right.
As
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Frankenstein not having any respect for the monster kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame that they didn't spend more time with the three of them, because I actually think there's a lot of interesting stuff.
Oh,
the dynamic there is really interesting.
Well, and, here's something that's always like they mention it. You could do a whole episode, I think, on why Soong chose to make them look exactly like he does. You know what I mean?
Like, and then he like looks at Data's face and he's like, I love that face.
He's such a narcissist, it seems like. Yeah, it's just a weird decision.
I took there to be a pretty ham-fisted, God analogy going on with Soong, in that he makes them in his own image, and then there's the Cain and Abel thing.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
And I wish they had spent more time with the three of them, because, I mean, even the way that Lore feels towards Data, and the way that Data, I can't say feels, but
reacts to
Lore, is actually really interesting, because they're both jealous of the other one. And even though Data can't be jealous, he's still trying to process that he understands himself to be less than Lore.
Well, Lore is what he's trying to get to, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he keeps repeating. Did you guys think it was weird when Data kept repeating, "He lied to me," over and over, whatever he says?
He's trying to work it out. Yeah, he's trying to work out data. Someone who lies constantly. That was kind of
weird. Should have got it immediately, you know? Yeah. And instead he's like, while Lore and the dad are going back and forth with that dialogue, he's just like, "It isn't true. I'm not less than him." Like, your Data, you wouldn't say that.
No, I sort of agree with you, Clay. I could have gone two ways with this episode. I would have done either much more of the Lore Soong Data stuff on the planet, or I could have done an entire episode based on Data malfunctions and takes control of the ship. Those are the two options I think that you can go with here.
Yeah.
I think Data malfunctions and takes control of the ship should have been one of the movies.
Yeah.
Because as soon as that shit happened, I was like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Why is there nobody on this ship that is the least bit wary of Data? Yep. Because he is, like you said, he's overpowered, but he's overpowered to a point where I think it makes sense. Like, why wouldn't he know everything there is to know about the ship? The fact that he shuts off the life support in the bridge is brilliant.
Yep.
He's got this level of understanding. It's like like maybe about 10 years ago, there was a Justice League story where the Justice League gets picked off one by one in exactly the only way that they could be taken out.
Yep.
And at the end of the story, spoilers, it turns out that the person who did all this or had the information to accomplish this was Batman.
Yeah.
Because Batman was so untrusting of everyone else, understandably, because that's how he is. He had files on every member of the Justice League in the Batcave to inform him how to take them out if he had to. And somebody got into the Batcave and took those files and then took out the entire Justice League.
Yeah.
And it's that, like, that sort of, and everybody is, Batman is always the character who is, there's always a little bit of apprehension towards him. And for exactly this reason, because he's going to be the person that has all the information on how to take everybody down, which is exactly what Data has.
Yeah.
And why? And there has got to be. I still think it should be Worf. I think Worf is the guy who should be untrusting of Data. Yeah. Just because. I mean, you know, Klingon. You know, Barbarian fights with his hands versus the robot. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's like a level of complete trust that they have in Data, that especially as a viewer, where the past like three Data episodes have ended in like weird, ambiguous, oh, maybe Data could kill everybody.
Right.
Moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
I think it's funny in this episode that the rest of the crew never reacts to Data like he's doing something maliciously. They immediately, when he beams down to the planet and they can't sense him, but they sense Soong, and they're like, there's a human down there. They immediately go, that guy's responsible for taking control of Data. You know what I mean?
Right.
They never assume that Data needs to be taken out or anything. Like, Data has just gone haywire.
Yeah.
There was an open
area screaming for a throwaway character in this episode to be the one to be the voice of reason, being like, see, I knew it. You couldn't trust that robot. And finally, he's here to screw us up. Like, you know, there was nobody there. Everyone was like, oh, well, you know, I guess he's probably got some reason to do it. I mean, honestly, if you watch it now that I'm thinking about it, I think Picard was that character, but he just wasn't saying it out loud. Because Picard in this episode is pretty great because he's very mad for the entire episode.
Yes, and no one is giving him the answers that he wants, and the computer is not obeying his commands. You'd think they'd also have, because in the first season, Wesley created that little box that could imitate people's voices. I think it was in The Naked Now. It's where he started taking control of the ship because he made the box speak like Picard.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd think they would have come up with a failsafe, because if that little idiot, you know, can do this at this point, maybe Data shouldn't be able to do it. Although I love the scenes of Data talking as Picard. I think they're not technically outstanding or anything, but it's a very clever idea.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool. When I was a kid, just seeing Data take over the ship, it was a very cool thing. You know, he has all this power just from being clever and, you know, a capable robot. But we spent the first two seasons, or a big part of it, arguing that Data is human, right? Like, there was that big trial and, you know, just everybody was sort of always questioning. And here we are early in the fourth season, and everyone's just suddenly, and he has this huge robot gaffe, and nobody says anything.
I know, it's never.
It's just over now. We don't even discuss it.
Well, that's the thing about Data. You said everyone thinks he's human. I mean, I'm sort of finding, as I've been doing this and getting feedback and listening to other things, a lot of people, I don't know what it is about Data. A lot of people maintain or insist that Data has emotions, of like the community kind of insists that.
You mean like fan community?
Yeah, or, like fan community. Mm-hmm. I mean, the show goes great lengths to not say that to say that Data does not have emotion. You know what I mean? I think it's some sort of like human imprinting onto Data that they try to do. They're like, no, I think he has emotions. It's like it's this very weird sort of reaction to a character that is clearly not emotional, and that's what makes these sort of situations so effective, is because he totally gets stripped away of his quote unquote humanity at these points.
I think what you're talking about is, maybe it might be a little bit of imprinting, but I also think it's the fact that if you were to play Data as having no emotions and being completely a robot, it would be really hard to watch. Yep. You know, like, and
if he just gave no reaction, if you mean like if a human actor wasn't playing him.
Right. It would be more like what he does in the first half of this episode, where he doesn't respond to anybody, and he's, you know, it would be that much more.
Right.
And because, you know, you're playing a character, you have to have at least some wiggle room of acting, you know?
Right. I mean, my argument here is, you know, people sort of base this on, they're like, oh, well, he's giving, you know, facial reactions and stuff. He's obviously feeling something. I mean, if I go super nerdy here, my understanding is that Soong has programmed him to sort of react like a human, but it doesn't mean he feels emotions. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like there's a part where Soong is talking to him and says something, and Data, like, you know, straightens up, and his eyebrow, he has this super aggressive, what did you say?
Right.
Eyebrow.
Yeah.
And so, but the way that Brent Spiner plays it is really mechanical, you know, in the way that he always plays Data. And so it works. You think it's just Data reacting to some sort of like protocol in him, that this is what you react to when you're not expecting this response from whatever.
That's right.
So he does do the facial stuff, and I think it's sort of, you know, calculated.
No, I think it's just it's a nice collision of, you have a human playing him, so it's incredibly difficult for him to be, or it would be you know, no advantage to having him just be completely flat the entire time, because that would really suck. But I mean, it also just works into he's, you know, he can mimic humans, you know, he can do stuff like that. It just doesn't mean he doesn't feel emotions or anything.
Okay, so here's a question for you then. And this occurred to me when I was watching it. So we've had an episode where he has lied about killing, attempting to murder someone in the episode with the collector guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We've had an episode where he claims that he has no emotional connection to his son that he has to deactivate.
Yep.
And then at the end of this one – daughter, sorry, excuse me. And then at the end of this one, he says to Soong, you know that I can't grieve for you. And he's like, yeah, I know that. Then why does he keep that hologram of Tasha in his desk?
Always bringing it back to Tasha.
Because she's very important to this show, and I will not stop until everyone realizes that.
That thing is basically just a holographic emotion chip. He should just jam it into his neck and just forever remember
but,
Tasha.
You know, there's a weird wiggle room here, because he's saying that he can't grieve. This is the second time that he's done that to a person who is close to him, a family member, his daughter and then his father. But when it comes to Tasha, maybe he's not actively grieving, but he has something that is leading him to hang on to this memento.
If you remember in Measure of a Man, did you watch that with me?
You don't remember.
They bring up the fact that he keeps all his medals, and they're like, why would an android who has no emotions, keep all of these sort of knickknacks. And we were also laughing whatever that episode was where they thought he died and Geordi and Wesley were just rummaging through his shit.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's, you know, my argument against that would just be Data is imitating humans and he's going to keep mementos.
Did they say that, Wes? Do you remember what the answer was?
In the Measure of a Man thing?
Yeah.
I think Data just makes an argument. He likes to be, like, reminded of, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean he feels anything, but he's sort of, you know, he's on a non-emotional level. He just likes to have these things around him, sort of. Why would he furnish his apartment?
Why would he have a cat? Why would he do circle paintings?
I think he's just, you know, he's a heavily... you know, like, basically, like, emotionally damaged person who's just trying to fit in some ways, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny you say that, because when Sung asks him why he chose Starfleet, and he's like, well, Starfleet were the people who rescued me. I was like, oh, man, Data has daddy issues like you wouldn't. Because he doesn't have a father figure, and now Starfleet is his father figure, so now he's following the steps of his adopted father.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And Sung should have just programmed him to want to be a cyberneticist if he wanted to be that interested.
See, that's another thing too, because there's the interesting thing between Lore and Data is that, you know, you could it seems on the surface that I know that Sung was trying to perfect this emotion chip or whatever, but if you're looking at it from Lore's perspective. The perfecting of the design is Data, which is a version of Lore that is more prone to follow directions. It has no free will to it, or at least less than Lore does.
No, I mean Data is the only Data. It's interesting. Data constantly calls Sung Sir, and Lore has no such pretense for anything like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And it's just really interesting because I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on, but they just didn't have the time or they didn't. You know, the other thing I wish they had done is I wish they had cast someone else as Sung because I think just because especially with three characters in a room for 40 minutes, if you're going to go that way, you get a lot more out of being able to have the actors act at each other.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if this episode had been the one that Patrick McGoohan had been on.
There you go.
And he was, Patrick McGoohan
he'd be a better Sung.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, if he had played Sung, and then you got Brent Spiner and McGoohan acting at each other for 40 minutes.
No, I totally agree with that. I think they do a pretty respectable job. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with Spiner's performance here. He plays the three characters are extremely different from each other.
Don't get me wrong. I think he does a really good job.
Yeah, no, I understand. But it's, you know, you just have to, when you're directing it, they do a couple shots of like, you know, when Sung slams the book down, Data's in the background. You know, they're trying to tie the shots together to make it look like it's not one person doing everything.
They had that nice first one where Sung, they start on his face and then the camera pans as he walks over to Data.
Yep.
And then he waves the pencil in front of Data's face.
Yeah. Yep.
And Data is supposed to be tracking the pencil, but he's way off.
The one after that is the one time I noticed the eye lines were way off. There's one where Data is just looking way over Sung's head. Because I think he might have shot the Data stuff first and not realized he was going to like hunch over as Sung. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or the person who was playing the body double was not hunched over like Sung. And so he's just staring over his head as he's talking to him. But other than that, I mean, it's a difficult directing job to do that one. That's a lot of work going into those guys.
But can we talk a little bit, if we can change gears just a little bit, and talk about how terrifying and easy it was for Data to take over the entire Enterprise?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Like,
I mean,
he does it in 1 second. He's just like, blip, gets a little homing beacon activated, and suddenly he's Killer Robot Man.
I have a couple technical things I wish I would have fixed. I don't understand why the crew is very relaxed when Data does not respond to commanders asking him questions about what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No one seems to care. I would have rewritten the early thing. I would have had the thing in the turbo lift where he sort of like glitches out for a second.
Yeah.
But I would have had him act normally after that. And like him hiding what's going on, and then he deactivates the life support. And as everyone's leaving, he's like, I'll stay here because I don't need the oxygen and I can work better from here. You know what I mean? Mm. And they'd all agree.
Well, I guess the problem there, though, is that he didn't know what – I mean, he – basically, his mind was shut off at that point. Right. He was basically going on autopilot.
The data that we know ceased to exist in that moment.
Right. I mean, I was wondering if they just thought that that was a bridge too far to have him actively deceiving people.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Especially because they, you know, have to put everything to rights at the end. I mean, this guy, imagine if the kid dies – then Data's court-martialed for, you know, wrongful death or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's just...
He was unaware. His memory core was blocked or whatever.
Actually,
you know. And I mean, then you deactivate him. He can't be third in charge of the Enterprise, if that's the case. If anybody can just, like, click a homing beacon and suddenly you turn into Killer Robot Man.
Although he was... he basically had the, you know, the mantle of he will not kill people. He goes out of his way to not hurt anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, you know, another saving grace.
Well, actually, what would have been actually really interesting is if they had, maybe it wouldn't have fit with the tone or the theme they were going for, but if they actually had a scene at the end where like Picard or Riker chews him out and he just doesn't really react to it because he doesn't, you know, like he reacts to it the way he reacts to everything, where he'd be like, all right, adjustment noted.
Yeah, you know, one of those scenes where I think they do this in Trek where, you know, you get a, I don't know what the term would be, you get like a, it goes on your record, you know, I'll be making a note
your
on
permanent your record.
Permanent record. And you're right, and Data not responding to it would be the trade-off of emotion. And even then you can go into the brothers scene, you know, where brothers forgive, Crusher tells them brothers forgive each other.
Yeah.
Because
I kind of like that scene, but I don't know if it really fits.
Yep.
Anything? It's weird. What do you think the theme of this episode is? Like, what is the overriding message that they're trying to say about Data?
Brother's gonna fight.
Brother's gonna brother. It seems a little like a redemption story for Lore.
Yeah.
You know, like they soften his character. We see him instead of as a maniacal evil doer, that he's got some sort of like hard childhood stuff he's dealing with.
But then so he does.
A big part of that was going on.
Then he does throw his father so hard he kills him.
Well, when you put it like that.
Also,
he was
also
asking for it.
Why didn't they send the fucking doctors to the planet?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as he gets Data gets back on the ship, everything goes back to normal. Absolutely. Send the doctors to the planet and say, "Hey, help this guy. We'll pick you up on the way back."
Well,
instead of just leaving him to die,
were they?
I don't think you leave him to die. I think you beam him to the ship and try to fix him. He's like politely refuses, and they're like, "Okay, dude, no. How about you save the one guy that knows how Data, the killer robot, is working?"
And Data is fine with it.
Yeah.
Like, not only does he say, "I can't grieve for you, take it sleazy," he says, I mean, he makes no effort to be like, you know, to make him get on the ship or something. Like,
but he asks for time alone with him. He's like, "Excuse me, Riker, can you leave us alone?
I know that
like,
child is dying.
It's my dad for a minute. I don't have any emotion and I can't grieve for you, but I need a minute alone."
It doesn't make any sense. It's a weird technical thing. I don't know if they were running out of time. It happens twice. Why don't we see Soong die? Were they going to bring him back? Were they just trying to keep it open that he might come back?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. I totally assumed he died.
I know he died. Like, you know, the show is, he's dead at this point in the show. Soong is not coming back.
There's an unused scene where they pull the freeze frame out in front of the camera and says Soong died on his way back to his home planet, like Poochie in The Simpsons.
The Enterprise should just leave, and he like, it's like a, you know, like a fast forward thing where like night goes away and day, and Soong is like, ooh, he's like, gets up, he's like, oh, I feel much better. Then it steps on a dinosaur and like slips and like breaks his neck or something.
They should have just had an insert shot of the Millennium Falcon flying away from the Death Star and the Death Star just exploding and then giant ridiculous explosion.
And the other thing that ties into the weird, we're not going to show you Soong die, which doesn't make any sense to me. how did Lore get the upper hand over Data, who is very suspicious of him this entire time?
Yeah.
We know that Lore knows how to turn him off, but you would think that...
Why would Data ever let him get behind him? You know what I mean? Like, there's no...
Yep. They just go to commercial, we come back, and the operation is happening.
Well, you really saw the strings where they're like, oh, here's your emotion chip. I'm kind of tired, Data. I'll go take a nap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Lore and Data look at each other, and then we cut back to a fantastic scene, I think, where Lore gets the chip.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was – I mean, I should have seen it coming, obviously, but I didn't realize – that it was Lore right away until after he's like, when he kind of gives that chuckle, I was like, oh, right. I get it.
Yeah.
No, because I just thought, you know, it was Data. I thought there was going to be kind of an interesting thing where Data gets the chip and then Data becomes more like Lore or something. You know, I'll tell you, I don't know if it's a matter of this B plot taking up too much time or something.
Yep.
Like, I felt like they just needed more time with the story. Like, I felt like this was going to be a two-parter or something.
Yes, I feel the same. I feel it could have been a two-parter. I mean, what's weird to me is that Data never gets the emotion chip. You know, that's what kind of would escalate the episode a little bit, you know, if he got these emotions.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't he get them eventually?
He does. He gets the chip back.
Yeah, and he, like, freaks out.
Yes, he freaks out. But, I mean... There's no payoff. It's such a tease, a weird tease of an episode where Lore just takes this. Data never experiences the emotions. And it just feels like it never amounts to anything. Sorry,
but it's kind of his holy grail, right? Like, now he knows this thing exists. He knows his brother has taken it from him. And I remember my first experience of this whole series is like when that comes back up, there's a Wild Wild West one. And Lore is involved, and like it sort of colors their entire relationship for the rest of the seasons, and it gives him kind of a quest, you know. Like, now we know how Pinocchio can become a real boy, and I don't know. I think it adds a little element to Data's character, you know.
And I mean, I think the emotion chip is a huge mistake on the show's part. Anyway,
why, Wes?
Basically, because of what happens when Data gets it, the emotion chip completely undoes Data's character. To the point where it's like annoying. if you watch Generations, that movie deals with Data having the emotion chip, and his plot line is infuriating.
Of all the times to use that plot line, when you're crossing over two franchises, I don't think it's the best time.
Not the best time. It's just, you know, what I like about the Data character is, like, he's got that logical, no-nonsense, just trying to do, like, the best ethical decision thing. He's a very strong character.
Yep.
And he becomes such a fucking ninny when he gets the emotions that it's like, this is so, like, why does the logic of the emotion chip makes you evil? Basically, makes no sense to me.
Well, I might be just remembering this from the way they kind of handle it in Generations, because I don't remember when he actually gets the chip back. But I always liked that after he gets it back, they kind of treat it almost like it's, you know, the ring from Lord of the Rings or something.
Yeah,
where, like,
it's in a little cabinet and they can look at it.
And he understands that using it will completely change him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what way it will change him or what he'll be like on the other side. And it's not a fear, because obviously he can't feel fear, but it's a hesitancy that I always thought that was an interesting way to play it.
I agree with that. I wish there was a, you know, they just, you could have had,
man,
like, love
or something. There's only so many times you can go back to the Joe Piscopo room and try and learn how to tell jokes. Speaking of jokes, why is the doctor in the joke Crusher tells Jewish?
Oh, God, wasn't that terrible? That was the thing that stuck out the most. And I'm like, I need to ask these guys, is she quoting some famous comedian that I don't know about?
It probably is.
Reading up on vaudeville routines from the 20s or something.
You know what's sad about that?
It took me out of the show, because I was like, there's got to be... Here they go back to this hokey humor again.
You know what's sad about those scenes? Besides the pointlessness of the kid's plot, it's purely a MacGuffin to get things going.
Right.
Those are some of Crusher's best acting scenes. she's really good in it. And it's like, why don't you just give her a goddamn plot line that like can actually amount to something? But she's basically comforting these children. The children are actually pretty good child actors too.
You know what would have been a lot better though and made things a lot feel a lot more like they had a lot more weight to them? If the kid looked like he was dying and not just you know, if he was bedridden
he just
looks
like
or something.
A sad kid.
Yeah, with a bunch of tubes in him or something.
Yeah, and she's giving him a head massage instead. Yep. And he's just like hanging out in a box. And where
he's
was
like, oh, well, I'm going to die.
That was the worst child acting line. That line is no good, but the kid didn't play it well. But his brother, I thought, was really, really good for a young actor.
Yeah, he was good.
I just – that plot line doesn't amount to a hill of beans, basically. I regret it because the Crusher McFadden's acting is really, really good in it. And I'm just – it's frustrating that that's the only thing she gets to do.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, do you guys have any other big points you wanted to get to, or should we wrap this up?
We can wrap it up. I just, man, I can't get the ease with which he took over the Enterprise out of my head.
Yeah.
See, nobody's even blinking an eye at the end of this. They're just like, oh, welcome back, Data. He totally shut the thing down. They were going to separate the saucer section again.
At warp 9.2, Wesley says very annoyingly, and Picard says, I know, dickhead.
Oh, that scene was
great.
Why
is Wesley even allowed to talk to anyone?
The blocking in that scene was amazing because when Wes turns around to talk to Picard, Picard has already turned his back on him.
he's talking to Geordi.
He's just talking into Picard's head.
Yeah.
And Picard doesn't turn to acknowledge him because the camera is in front of him, and he's just like, yes, I know.
And Wheaton's trying to do his best to give, like, you know, facial – because the camera's on you. You have to give, like, facial responses. So he's just, you know, overly – you're like smiling along with whatever is being said.
And then later on in that scene when I forget exactly what is said, but Picard asks for something and Wes gives the response that is like, nah, we can't do that. And it's like such a douchey response. I wish they had just cut back to Picard and been like, excuse me, sir?
This is not Wes at his worst, but Wes is not good in this episode.
He's just
in the way. He's underfoot.
Yes, he's in the way. Yeah,
and he's dressing and doing his hair a lot like Riker these days.
Oh, yes, look at Brooklyn, real similar, real similar.
I did want to say one more thing about the taking over the Enterprise thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like
it's the best part of this episode.
Oh, it's really great. It could have been its own entire episode.
It's terrifying.
And I think what doesn't make sense and what plays into him being overpowered is do they allow Data more freedom than they would a human crew member? So what I mean is he can tap into everything and he has access to everything, even stuff that Riker doesn't have and even stuff that Picard doesn't have.
That's
shouldn't
true.
There be some sort of like safeguard in place? I mean, is this racist towards androids to say that maybe there should be some sort of thing in place in case he tries to go over their helmet or something?
No, I mean, that's basically true because he has everybody's house key, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, just by his nature of being, he can go... You know,
and the keys to all the cars.
Yeah. He's got the keys
there
to all the cars
be,
and everything.
I mean, it was such a – I didn't realize, Wes, that they already – Wesley already made a voice modulator or something in an earlier episode. Like, they know what a danger it is to have everything just be vocal. Picard should have some sort of, like, protocol safeties when they first mention a password. And Geordi's like, I thought Data might try something like that.
I know. Geordi, you should have brought that up.
Like, yeah, he just changed the password on the Enterprise.
Geordi is useless in this episode.
God. Yeah, but, like, hilariously useless.
Like, when they're having that meeting and Riker's like, you know what? Can we do this really complicated thing that there's really no reason I should know how to do this? And Geordi's like, I guess we should probably, yeah, we could try that, I guess. Why didn't you think of that, fucking engineer?
I appreciated the like thematic mirrorness because what they basically do is, I don't know, they scrape a bit of data off the transporter and make the transporter think that they're all Data. That's basically what they do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
yeah.
It was a nice mirroring of Data becoming Picard to take over.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently everybody is just becoming everybody else.
Again, why wasn't that Geordi's idea? Or why wasn't that O'Brien's idea? You know, why would Riker have that idea?
Yeah. Why?
And also, man, talk about being useless in an episode. Did Marina Sirtis even get paid for this episode?
Was she in it?
She talks to the kid at the beginning when Riker's chewing him out.
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
She has like one concerned look into the camera. That's
yeah. Right. And, yeah, she brings him to sick bay too when yep. his brother rejects him at the first
right,
time.
Right.
Yep.
Huh. Oh, yeah, one more thing.
Sure.
The end of this episode made me again. This is building off of the end of this episode, the end of the Collector episode, and the end and his other displays of being a cold-hearted badass. the line at the end where about brothers forgiving or whatever. When they go back on him and he kind of gives that like click or something. For some reason. I was thinking, man, I want to see Data go on a stone cold logic driven revenge tour.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yep.
like that's how I see the Data takes over the ship thing playing out, where it's like, no, this is the logical conclusion that I'm going to. I'm acting completely unemotionally about it. I have to get to from point A to point B and I have to kill Lore or kill, something like that.
Deactivate
it's
Lore.
Like, that would, I mean, I feel like there's room in there for just something so, I don't know if you could do it and come out on the other end without the character being completely different in the eyes of the people watching the show. But to have him go on a quest like that to that, which to him makes complete, perfect, logical sense.
Yep.
But to everyone else looking at him is like horrified by it.
Well, you'd have to change the Lore character, I guess, because Lore is not particularly threatening, and he kills a guy, but it's not like he's not like a danger to the universe really at this point.
Yeah.
This is so it's sort of a weird episode because it's the only Lore episode where he isn't that way, where he's not like very dangerous to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I could have seen that done. It all sort of comes back to the Soong Lore Data scenes just not amounting to anything interesting.
Yeah. I was thinking, it's like, well, he says that he can't grieve for his father's death, but is there something in his brain or his mechanics that could put together the 1, 2, 3 that, oh, you murdered my father, so therefore I should enact revenge upon you,
yep.
or something like that.
You took this important, basic emotion chip that I've always wanted from me, and, there should be some sort of computer math adding up to kill Lore.
Get this back. It's
yeah.
a continuation of the most toys, I guess, at that point,
yeah.
right? Interesting. Well, yeah. let's. I'm going to play a clip. We'll come
you
back.
You can read all about this stuff in my fan fiction.
go to Clay's blog, therealstartrek.com.
Where Tasha and Data live happily ever after on the holodeck.
I'm going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back, me, Clantana, and we're going to give our ratings for this episode. We'll give some final thoughts. And then we'll be out.
Everybody dies, Data. Well, almost everybody.
Do you believe that we are in some way alike, sir?
In many ways, I'd like to believe.
Then it is all right for you to die. Because I will remain alive. You know that I cannot grieve for you, sir.
You will. In your own way. Goodbye. Goodbye, Data.
Goodbye, Father.
Okay. Time to rate brothers and give our final thoughts. So I thought that was a pretty good discussion. We covered our bases here. We all seem to agree that we like the intro Data taking over the ship aspect the most.
Mm-hmm.
We all seem to think that the Soong family reunion is not all that is cracked up to be.
Yeah.
And we seem to think that the B plot is pretty much garbage. well done garbage, but garbage nonetheless.
Right.
So let's go Clay. How about you lead us off here?
Okay. Well, I think at this point we've all had exposed some inkling of how our own personal rating systems are skewed in certain directions.
Yes, absolutely.
And as I've said in the past, what skews me more than other things are really interesting ideas presented, that maybe aren't executed to the best of their ability, but are worth taking note of. And I think this episode has at least two of those. I think Data taking over the ship is a really great sequence, and it's also a really interesting idea to think on. And the Data lore and Sung stuff, while probably should have been its own episode, and I don't know, it doesn't really land totally. I think there's a lot of interesting dynamic going on there that could have been exploited. Yep. And that plus the fact that I think it's just a really entertaining episode to watch, I'm actually going to give this a 4.
Right. Oh, wow.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
A shocking 4.
People who are just tuning in, we grade on a scale of 1 to 5. So 5 is peak Star Trek. Clay's going to give this one a 4. Tan, what are you going to do?
Wow, I'm going to go with a 3. I think it was a really enjoyable episode when I watched it the first time and I was much younger and didn't know things about plot holes and storytelling. And I really enjoyed it. And I think it's enjoyable, but this is not something I would show a non-Star Trek viewer.
Yeah, yeah.
That goes along with your 1 to 5, right?
Yeah. Yep, that's the...
So I liked it. I wouldn't change the channel probably if it came on, but I'm not going to show it to a non-Trekkie.
Yeah, I love the opening. I'm sort of in line with what Clay is saying about this. Is like a whole bunch of potential that really just doesn't land well enough for it to amount to anything. The intro is spectacular. The Data stuff that goes on where he takes over the ship and moves around is wonderful and fantastic. He gets to the planet. It's fine for a little while. It's a little boring when it's just him and Soong. Lore shows up. Lore doesn't really add anything to this. He takes the emotion chip. I don't know what the overriding theme of this is, what the family theme is supposed to be. This is a very important character in Star Trek, the Soong character. Doesn't have many appearances, but he certainly leads to a ton of other characters.
Yeah.
And this episode does not really do him justice, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, big problem. And just the fact that the B plot of the kids is silly.
Yeah.
I'm going to also give this one a 3. I think it really, has some really, really strong aspects that are knocked down to a fairly average, realm. And I'm going to give it a 3. And I can understand why people like this episode. I wouldn't understand people who didn't like this episode. I just think it's more average than great at certain points.
Yeah.
I still really think they should have cast somebody else's son, because I think that would go a long way.
That would have made a big difference, I think, Clay.
Yeah, because, you know, there's as good of an actor as, you know, anybody is, when you're playing an old person, it never comes across with the subtlety you think it is.
Yeah.
And especially when you're trying to work through, you know, like half an inch of old person makeup.
It reminded me a little bit of the Admiral Jameson episode, Clay, from season 1.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But, you know, like if they had gotten someone with, you know, Patrick Stewart levels of gravitas, or, you know, someone who immediately tells you just by, you know, the way they're acting, what sort of person they are. Like, you know, like if they got, I mean, Michael Caine's pretty cheap. They should have got Michael Caine to do it or something.
Here's a question for you both before we sign off. Spiner's performance as Soong, is it appropriate, underserved, or is he hamming it up too much? Which way would you, if you had to redo it and direct him, what would you tell him to do? Amp it up, tone it down, or keep it the same?
I think he does the character a disservice. I would not play that character as an old fuddy-duddy. I think he needs to be more of a scientist. He needs to be, you know, less like this grandfather figure. So I don't know if the problem is with the way he's acting it, or if it's with the dialogue or something in between.
But yeah, see, I think his performance is pretty good. I think the writing lets him down. I could have seen an episode where he goes way hammy, too crazy, and it just ruins the episode.
Yeah.
And I don't think going under would serve anybody either. I think he doesn't irritate me, you know, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's a writing thing. I understand what they're going for. I understand they're going for this, you know, 50-year tenured college professor kind of, you know, when you go into his office and it's just papers floor to ceiling kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that being said, you are also dealing with the most advanced form of artificial intelligence known to the universe.
And every other previous mention of this character has been like, he's brilliant. You know, it's all this stuff. He doesn't come across that way.
Yeah. So you would think that
has that stuff where he's like, Sung always gets it wrong or whatever the joke was.
Yeah. So I wish they had expanded. That's what, if this is a two-parter, I need to know more about why they called him never. What do they call him? Yeah. Always wrong.
Always wrong, Sung. Yeah. Like what if the thing was that Sung was actually more like Lore in that the reason he created Data was because he wanted someone that he could control.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, something a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little bit less than just,
he grafted his brain onto Lore's, you know, positronic brain or whatever, and that's what caused him to be so unstable. You know, something interesting like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not that I'm saying that he needs to be a villain or anything, but I think performance wise, I think he does fine. I think he's good. I think he probably does as well as one actor acting against two versions of themselves in an early 90s syndicated television show could do.
Also the title of my memoir. It's a little long, but that's what it's going to be.
It's okay. It's a coffee table book. So but yeah, I think they could have written that character better.
Yes, I agree. Well, let's wrap it up there. You guys have anything to plug? Tanda, you're kicking off Kickstarter, so why don't you tell people
I'm wrapping up a Kickstarter. I've got a week left to go in a Kickstarter. You can check it out on Kickstarter. If you search for Duck, Third Time is the Charm. It's the third installment of my award-winning lesbian comic series. And I haven't hit my funding goal yet, but I'm very close.
It's the exact opposite of brothers, right? It's sisters.
It is. And so go over there, check it out. Duck, Third Time is the Charm. And yeah, that's pretty much has been consuming my focus lately.
Absolutely. I'll put a link in the video. I'll put a link in the description below.
Yeah, you guys, you'll be able to see videos of me talking, you know, at the camera and wearing flannel.
You should sign me up. You have to make a video where you play Lore and Sung, and then that thing will be kickstarted within an hour.
Yes, yes.
Cool. Well, Clay, you got anything?
No, I'm going to be at the New York Comic Con this weekend, but I'm not going to have a table, so I'm just going to be floating around. So if you can find me, I will kindly ask you to leave me alone.
Yeah, Clay, will you tweet a lot of pictures? I want to feel like I'm there.
Sure, I will absolutely do that.
Smother us with pictures. All right, guys. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Wes. This is always fun.
Absolutely. We'll be back. What the hell is after this? Suddenly Human is the episode. I'll be back talking about that with somebody. Thank you guys for listening. Check out Tana's stuff. Check out Clay's stuff. We'll go. We'll follow Clay on Twitter as he marches around New York. And other than that, if you guys are watching on YouTube, a like and a comment is appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review is greatly appreciated. It helps the show get out there. Thanks, guys. And Tana, Clay, have fun. And I will be back with Suddenly Human. We'll